We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com. And on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us. It's Saturday, the 15th of April. It's Federico Tessio Stakes Day here in Maryland, plus other stuff going on all over the place, including the Lexington Last Call for the Triple Crown Trail takes place today at Keeneland. My name's Frank Vespi. We're going to be talking thoroughbred racing and breeding in Maryland, across the Mid-Atlantic, and around the country for the next hour. Today's show, today's episode, if you will, of Off to the Races Radio is powered by The Racing Biz. TheRacingBiz.com is the website. We're on the socials. Come find us. We are at The Racing Biz on the socials. What a great show we've got lined up today. We've got Alan Foreman of the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. He's going to be in to help us make some sense of the future of what racing's going to look like here in Maryland. Some important legislation passed earlier this week. Alan's going to tell us how that's going to impact the future of racing in Maryland. He's coming up just a few minutes, just before 10 past the hour. At the bottom of the hour, right around 10:30 or a little after, Charlestown track announcer Paul Espinosa going to stop in and handicap the first stake of the year there. That is the original Gold Stakes, and that takes place this evening. John Piasek is going to close the show by handicapping the stakes this afternoon at Laurel Park. John, the Maryland handicapper for The Racing Biz, you can look for him at about 12 minutes to 11 thereabouts to handicap the Federico Tessio Stakes and the Weber City Miss. Plus, we're going to be hearing from attorney Richard Hackerman and from Larry Johnson, owner of stallion True Valor. Special thanks to friends of the show, like the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, and True Valor, a new stallion standing at Northview Stallion Station. Now, here's a common problem facing horse owners. When your horse gets to the end of his career and you want to retire him, how do you make sure he lands in a good situation? And even more important, stays in a good situation. If you don't have your own farm, that can be kind of a dicey problem. And even if you find a good person to take the horse now, what happens next? What happens in the future? Here to tell us some legal steps you can take to ensure your horse's present and future is attorney and horse owner Richard Hackerman. All right, time for Legal Matters with Richard Hackerman. The website for Richard Hackerman is richardhackerman.com. Going to talk some legal issues. And Richard, an issue that comes up very often with people is, what about when my horse retires? And I know you've had a couple of experiences that have really influenced the way you think about that. Why don't you tell us what you got?
Okay, thank you, Frank. You know, so I've retired a few horses in my day and had a couple of negative experiences. One of them, retired a five-year-old mare, went to someone's home, I thought to be a brood mare, and she showed up in the entries at Charlestown at the age of nine with no published works down there for the papers. Unfortunately, I had not turned the papers over to the new owner. And, of course, I told them down there that the horse had been injured. As far as I know, had not trained in a number of years, and the horse had retired with a career-ending injury, and the horse was fortunately scratched. I also had another experience where I sold a mare to a man in New York. He had a farm. I got pictures of the horse with his daughter for a number of years. Seemed like a great match. That horse ended up in New Holland, which is the kill pen in Pennsylvania, and the horse was rescued, but that definitely influenced how I approached the retirement of horses. That gentleman, and I think it was actually very nice. He had sold the horse, he said, for $500 when, for whatever reason, he needed to sell the horse. But, of course, the horse is worth more at New Holland than $500, so obviously you need to be very careful who you sell or give away your horses too. So that has influenced how I approach horse retirement and aftercare.
So what is it that if I'm going to retire my horse is coming off the racetrack and I want to make sure that the horse is going to be in a good situation. Obviously, I've got to choose the people that get it wisely, but what other steps should I take?
Well, again, you say you have to choose the people wisely. There's definitely people around the Maryland area that are very good at, number one, vetting the people that approach you for the new horses. You vet them, at least to some extent financially, to make sure that they have the wherewithal to take care of a horse. Where is the horse going to be? What is it they intend to do with the horse? So I think that's probably the most important step. But you don't know where the horse is going to end up after that. And therefore, for that reason, a contract is needed with the people that take your horse. The contract can be in the form of a lease. The contract can be in the form of an agreement, which obviously a contract, obviously it has to be in writing. There are different things you can put in the contract, perhaps a right of first refusal, which would be the most important aspect of it. That if the new owner wants to sell or transfer the horse, they have to approach you first. You can do perhaps an option to purchase with a right of inspection if you think that the horse is not getting care. What you can work out with the prospective purchaser, of course, depends on what they're going to do with the horse. If people have an idea that they're going to retrain the horse to be an eventer or a jumper or a show horse, it's going to be very hard to get them to agree to give you an option to purchase the horse because they may have visions of retraining the horse and selling the horse for a lot of money, or retraining the horse and using the horse at events or shows and making money with the horse. So what you're going to agree on obviously depends on what they're going to do with your horse. And of course, what they're going to do with your horse depends on the horse that you're giving away. Depends on its age. Depends on its looks. Whatever talent it has, whether or not you've attempted to retrain the horse for an after career, whether or not you're giving the horse away or selling the horse, whatever the current market is for the horse, because the market for retired horses sometimes gets very hot, sometimes gets very cold, often dependent upon the time of the year. So most importantly, you would have a contract with the new purchaser, again, a right to inspect perhaps. But the most important thing is a right to repurchase the horse, or a right of first refusal, so that the horse can't simply end up in someone's grasp where you've lost complete control of the knowledge of where the horse is or what the secondary market purchaser would have to do with the horse. Enforcing the contract can be difficult, but nonetheless, this does give you some redress. At least you can go to court and try to enforce the terms of the contract.
That was Richard Hackerman. The website is richardhackerman.com. Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, good friend of this program, and also somebody you can talk with if you're looking to retire your racehorse and want to make sure they get protected. Want to stay in kind of the realm of the business side of horse racing right now. Sat down with Alan Foreman recently. He is the general counsel for the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. Some pretty important legislation passed the Maryland General Assembly this past session, which concluded this past week. And I wanted to talk with Alan and have him explain to us what exactly this legislation does and what it means for the future of Maryland racing. Give it a listen. Alan Foreman joining us here. And Alan, thanks for making a few minutes for us here to talk about this legislation that just passed. It's SB 720, passed the Maryland General Assembly, and it, among other things, it creates a Maryland Racetrack Operating Authority. That authority is going to have wide-ranging abilities to own or lease property, develop new racing facilities, manage day-to-day racing, take steps it believes necessary to support and sustain Maryland thoroughbred racing and parimutuel wagering activity. That's language straight from the bill. That sounds a lot like what the Maryland Jockey Club is supposed to be doing, but you called it a monumental moment in the history of Maryland racing. Why is this so important?
So first, thanks for having me on, Frank. And I think this is a monumental moment for Maryland racing. There have been several in the last couple of decades, but this certainly is one. And I think the stage was set for this at the end of last year's legislative session. The redevelopment plan that I was, you know, a part of developing was at a stalemate. The putting aside the issues of COVID, supply chain issues, increase in costs of goods, design issues, particularly as it relates to Laurel, and the impact of the economy somewhat tanking. And we had a tax issue that had been presented to leadership involving the Laurel property. It's a provision of the federal tax code that imposes a capital gains tax on the private owner of property that is being improved for sports and entertainment purposes with public dollars. And that related to the use of Laurel in the redevelopment plan and the need for a conveyance of the property, because with this provision of the tax code, Belinda Stronach would incur a significant, and I mean, you're talking five, six-figure capital gains tax if, in fact, the Laurel property is improved under the redevelopment plan. And the only way around that is to convey the property to the state, to the local county, or to a not-for-profit. So we began discussions with the Stronach Group, particularly with the 10-year agreement expiring at the end of 2022, on what the future might look like. And they had indicated that they would be willing to entertain a different model for Maryland Racing going forward that would, in essence, not have them involved in the ownership and operation of Laurel. They did intend at the time to want to keep Pimlico in the Preakness, but they were willing to entertain those discussions. And in order to break the stalemate, the General Assembly instructed us to engage in discussions with stakeholders, Maryland Horse Breeders, MTHA, and Maryland Jockey Club, in what the future might look like, what could be done, and the possibility of creating an authority, a state-operated authority, similar to the way Del Mar operates in California, and not terribly dissimilar to the way NYRA operates, to have an authority that could take title to the property, could set up an operating entity, and could allow racing to continue, whether at Laurel or somewhere else. And we telegraphed that in our report to the General Assembly at the end of September, where we said that the best model going forward might be to create a public-private partnership. At the same time, the Stadium Authority, which was conducting its review and design work for both Laurel and Pimlico, determined that there were tremendous deficiencies at the Laurel property. Code violations in excess of $20 million, structural issues with the grandstand, infrastructure and other issues on the backstretch, and that the cost to redevelop Laurel probably was going to be double what we anticipated when we redid the redevelopment plan. And on top of that, if then the state was going to have to purchase the property, and you know, look, there are appraisals that were done by Medco and others, we haven't seen the appraisals, but I think that there is a sense that Laurel has substantial value. It just didn't seem feasible that Laurel would be on the table. So we've looked at a number of things. We've looked at the authority. We've looked at what would racing look like if we had to move from Laurel, creating a training center. Could we race at Pimlico year-round? What other options do we have? We've been studying all those issues intensely in preparation for the legislative session this year, and it became very apparent that we needed to create an authority, a public body that could study these issues, could break the stalemate if the Stronach Group were to determine it did not want to continue racing at Laurel or in the state. We needed someone who would be prepared to step in. The only way we're going to move the industry forward at this point, creation of this authority, it was a very heavy lift, but leadership got behind it, the governor got behind it, and here we are. The Maryland Thoroughbred Racetrack Operating Authority has been positively voted on by the legislature. The governor has not yet signed the bill. We expect him to do so shortly, and we expect him to populate the authority as soon as possible so it can hit the ground running. As you know, we were parties to a 10-year agreement that stabilized racing in the state. That agreement expired at the end of December. It has only been renewed for 6 months. As we work through these issues, we're probably going to need another extension, but there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of meat on the plate, and we have a lot of work to do.
Talking with Alan Foreman, General Counsel of the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. And Alan, this is a pretty different model. I mean, Maryland traditionally has regulated horse racing as a regulated gaming industry. In more recent years, it's subsidized racing through slot machine revenues. Now it could potentially get into actually kind of the nuts and bolts and nitty gritty of running day-to-day racing. And I'm curious as to, obviously it reached a successful conclusion in the legislature, but these are times where there's a lot of suspicion of government and a lot of feeling that government is not competent to do things. And some horsemen have raised that to me. I'm curious as to whether you heard that from people as these ideas started to coalesce.
Yeah, actually, I have not heard that concern. And the intent here is not for the government to run horse racing in this state, nor, quite frankly, does the state see itself as running racing in this state. But you've got to have an entity. You have to have a viable option move forward. One thing that everybody needs to understand, it's a very sobering part of Maryland racing, but we're not going to have gaming at the racetracks in this state, unlike our neighboring states, including Virginia. That was foreclosed when Frank Stronach did not properly file his application for a slots license and pay the fee. He was disqualified. And when that happened, we being the racing industry, was frozen out of the ability to build our business through not only racing revenue, but gaming revenue. So what we get is a subsidy. We get money from the VLT wagering throughout the state. We get a piece for purses, and there is a small piece that goes to the racetracks for capital improvements. We had four facilities, then we had three facilities, we have two facilities, and the problem has been, and this predates the Stronach Group, we only have one revenue stream supporting two facilities, and that's insufficient. It doesn't work. It's why the redevelopment plan was proposed. It's why Belinda Stronach wanted to close Pimlico and move to Laurel. And so when you couple that with the fact that we will not have gaming in the state, we're not an attractive option for some third-party operator or a gaming company because there's no reason for them to come in here. So we've got to figure this out ourselves. And look, the Stronach Group has made very clear they're not prepared to stay here and sustain massive losses while they continue in operations supporting two facilities. So to us, the only way to move forward was to create a new paradigm, to look at options elsewhere. We're going to have to live within our means. We think we can do it. We, through this evolving plan, will have at least one new facility. We're going to have new barns for new stables, new backstretch for the horsemen. Racing is going to look different in the future, but the status quo isn't going to work. And if you look around the country, there aren't very many venues where new facilities are being built and racing is being reimagined. So to me, this is all to the good, but somebody has to oversee this, just like the Maryland Stadium Authority oversees baseball and football. The Stadium Authority doesn't run the teams. They don't run the events. They oversee the properties. They oversee through an operator compliance. That's what this authority ultimately we hope will do. But this authority will have the ability to bring in a third-party operator if one can be found. Or we can set up our own operating entity, such as is done at Del Mar or done in New York. So there are lots of options, and that's what we're going to have to look at. We've had teams of experts looking at the financial operations, the business operations, the physical plants. We have a very good handle on what we think we need to do. It's now just a problem of now t- taking this to the next level.
You've mentioned the Stronach Group. I mean, handicapping this out a couple of years, is the Stronach Group in your view, or if you look out a couple of years, do you think the Stronach Group is still in Maryland, or are they not in Maryland any longer?
Well, I mean, it's going to depend on a lot of circumstances. One circumstance is that if we develop a new plan for Maryland, let's say we're consolidating racing at Pimlico, as some have speculated, and we build a training center. During the construction of Pimlico and even the construction of a training center, we're going to have to continue to race at Laurel, and they own the property. And so we're going to have to enter into some form of an arrangement with them in order to utilize Laurel. Pimlico is being donated to the city of Baltimore, but we're going to have some arrangement with the Stronach Group, or the state is going to have to step in to force the issue. So that's among the many things that we have to look at. But our responsibility is to preserve, maintain, and protect the racing industry in this state. And so through the authority, I think we now have all means at our disposal, regardless of what happens, to ensure that we maintain stability here. And that's the key right now. If this legislation had not passed, I would have been very pessimistic and extraordinarily concerned about the future of Maryland racing. I think that's why I call this a monumental moment, because it frees us up to do things that we previously couldn't do.
Talking with Alan Foreman of the Maryland Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association here on Off to the Races, and just a couple minutes left, but I guess a couple last questions. One is, 3 years ago when the Racing and Community Development Act passed, that seemed to provide a way forward to rebuild Laurel, rebuild Pimlico, you know, kind of set things up within the same footprint that Maryland Racing had been in for a long time. It sounds now like the future is more likely to involve one racetrack and a separate training center and not two racetracks. Is that fair to say?
Well, that's going to depend. It's going to depend on, well, we have a very good sense of what Pimlico is going to cost, but now, given that Laurel may not be an option, we may have to take another look at Pimlico and see how we can maximize the use of that property on a year-round basis. I don't want to tell you that Laurel is not an option. It's becoming less likely an option because of just the absolute astonishing cost, not only to acquire it, but to renovate it, rehabilitate it. You got to start from scratch. And that just seems like the least likely of the options. But there are options on the table. We're looking at them. One of them is that we didn't think this was an option, and we'll see how strong it is Bowie. Mm-hmm. Bowie is potentially back in play. If you read the legislation, there is an extension of the required conveyance of Bowie under the original redevelopment plan. Part of that is to free up discussions on the possibility of the industry being able to reacquire Bowie for use as a training center. And maybe if there are sufficient dollars in doing that, we can construct a small clubhouse and you know, conduct live racing at Bowie and Pimlico. Now, there's the challenge of maintaining two facilities with one revenue stream. But, you know, it's an option, and we're going to look at every option. The redevelopment plan, as I was a part of that was proposed, seems less and less likely, but the money is allocated for a redevelopment plan. That's what the authority will undertake with the stakeholders, to take a fresh look at the plan and come up with something that works. I think that the likelihood of Pimlico being completely redeveloped and rebuilt is very strong. I think that's going to happen. But none of this is going to go forward until we have a plan for the industry and we have a plan for Laurel. And there will be time for input from horsemen, from breeders, from everyone, to make sure we do the best we can with the resources that we're going to have to work with. And my last point on this is, we're extremely fortunate that we're in the state of Maryland. because the racing industry has been a part of the history and culture and economy of the state. And that is recognized by our new governor. It's recognized by leadership, president of the Senate, speaker of the House. And we've got a lot of new, young, progressive legislators who don't necessarily know or understand our business, but they're behind us and they understand how important this is. And that's why, to me, it's just monumental that we were able to accomplish this.
So last thing, and I'll let you go, what happens now? What comes next?
So the authority legislation becomes effective on June 1. My hope is that the governor will move quickly to name the members of the authority. I don't see any reason why the authority couldn't begin to do its work even before the bill becomes effective on June 1, including securing staff and starting to some of the legwork has already been started, well on its way, including looking at various options. We got a pretty good handle on it. You've got the Maryland Economic Development Corporation, which has a seat on the authority. They've been working on this since last June when they were empowered to do so by last year's legislation. They've got a big leg up. You got the Maryland Stadium Authority that's been involved. You'll have the stakeholders involved. So we will certainly be able to hit the ground running, but the authority has to issue a report to the General Assembly on a number of issues, including identifying two potential sites for a training center or racetrack or whatever, and that's got to be done by December 1. So we've got 4 months to get this done. We also need to know what our relationship is going to be with the Strohn effort going forward. We've got to extend the 10-year agreement hopefully beyond July 1. What is that going to look like? We're in discussions with the Strohn group right now about such an extension. So there are a lot of moving parts, and just everyone needs to know that we're laser focused on this. I know I've been working on this 25/7 for quite some time, and we won't stop until we get this sorted out and we get it on track. But this is a breakthrough with respect to the redevelopment plan and the future of Maryland racing.
All right, Alan Forman, thanks for joining us here and helping us try to make some sense of it and maybe start to bring together what the future of Maryland racing might look like.
Well, thank you, Frank, and your coverage has been outstanding. Your column, I think it was yesterday, the day before yesterday, was just outstanding. So just, you know, I feel good that you're getting the message out there and you're accurately portraying what's going on, and we appreciate that.
Well, thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll be talking with you soon.
Talk to you soon. Thank you.
Should be really interesting here in Maryland in the coming months as the authority comes online and works on the report that it has to draft for the legislature, as the sides try to work out an extension of the racing agreement to keep racing going, and really, as the future of Maryland racing begins to be sort of cobbled together. So stay tuned. A lot more to come. We appreciate Alan Forman stopping by to help us get a handle on things. Okay, I want to switch gears now and get maybe more into the racing side of racing. And I want to go into the breeding shed with one of the more interesting stallion prospects to arrive in Maryland in recent years. That's the Irish bred True Valor, and I want to bring in his owner, Larry Johnson. Happy to be joined here by friend of the program, Larry Johnson, on Off to the Races Radio. Larry is standing True Valor, one of the most interesting new sires in Maryland at Northview Stallion Station right now. And Larry, let's talk about True Valor's racing career a little bit. This guy has a pretty remarkable career to talk about.
Yeah, first of all, a pleasure to be with you. True Valor is the horse that I bought at a racing age stale. He had already won grade two and grade three races in California, going long on the grass, and he had won a grade three in Europe. When I purchased him, I thought he had a stallion potential, both pedigree-wise and performance, but also I was intent on racing him. He was six when I bought him. And, you know, we ultimately, after a few races, switched him to sprinting, and he became just a terrific turf sprinter. He placed in a couple graded stakes. We sent him to Dubai based on the invitation we'd received, and he ran in the grade one sprint on World Cup Day. Unfortunately, he came out of that race injured, and we gave him 13 months off and brought him back this past year in 2022 as an eight-year-old, and he won first time out in the King Leatherberry sprinting on the turf at Pimlico, or Laurel, I guess it was. And from there, we went to New York, and he was beaten the length in the grade one Jiper by Katha Creed, who's a multiple grade one winner. And from there, we were looking for a maybe slightly softer spot. We went to the grade three Troy at Saratoga and ended up running against Golden Bow, who just won the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint 2 years in a row. So we got into deeper water, and he outran Golden Bow from the break, which nobody else in this country had ever done. And he was caught late and got beat a bob on the wire in that race. So he ran against the best. He won stakes from 5.5 to a mile, and he won on synthetic at Woodbine. So he's a very versatile racehorse who had speed, who could carry that speed, was a very, very excited about his stallion career.
I think one of the things that's interesting that you touched on there, too, is, one, the versatility he showed, but, two, also for folks worried about an age in racing when horses, you know, are done at three and we really don't know if they were sound or not, this is a horse that ran some of his best races at 8 years old.
Yeah, he won stakes, I think, for five consecutive years. And, unfortunately, after the Troy had a minor issue, and at that point, the best course was to retire him. But, you know, he was continued to compete and, frankly, got better. And, you know, when I say to Graham, I don't think anyone thought we were going to have a turf sprinter. And, you know, to come back from an injury as an eight-year-old and to run the kind of races he did with buyers in excess of 100, running against grade one company, it was just remarkable. And age certainly didn't get in his way. If anything, he just got better.
Which is a thing that we all look for. And because he was a turf horse, that's in an era when turf racing is increasingly prevalent in the Mid-Atlantic and all over the country, that's a pretty good spot to be in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about it. I know sometimes the market devalues turf horses, but you know, the turf racing today is very popular. The money's quite good. Colonial's going to get more days in the future, I think. New York is going to put in a synthetic track at Belmont. And I think turf translates to synthetic. He won an open allowance at Woodbine on the synthetic. So I think he's got versatility, both in surface as well as distances. And I think, and given his pedigree, which is precocity and quality, I think he's got a legitimate chance at stud.
All right, True Valor standing at Northview Stallions. Larry Johnson's going to be joining us in the coming weeks. Larry, come back next week, and we'll talk a little bit more about True Valor's pedigree. How's that?
I look forward to it because I think he's got a very interesting and deep pedigree, and I look forward to talking about that pedigree as well.
All right, that sounds good. Larry Johnson, owner of True Valor, standing at Northview Stallion Station. You're listening to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz, TheRacingBiz.com. Want to switch gears yet again? We're going to start handicapping some races now. Still to come, end of the hour, going to be John Piazek, the Racing Biz Maryland handicapper, joining us to talk about the big races at Laurel Park today, including the Federico Tessio Stakes win and in for the Preakness, as well as the Weber City Miss, a win and in for the Black-Eyed Susan, both those races coming up in May. So that's still to come. But first, want to talk with Charlestown Races track announcer and line maker Paul Espinosa. The first stake of the year is this evening at CT, and that is the Original Gold Stakes. Paul, good morning. Welcome to Off to the Races. Thanks for joining us on a Saturday morning to talk about the racing at Charlestown. Today begins the stakes schedule at Charlestown. Are you excited to get to stakes action at long last?
Well, Frank, good to be with you, and good morning to you as well. Yes, the long winter is finally over. Kind of we're finished with the winter doldrums, and nice to kind of spice things up here with a nice full field of 10 in the original gold tonight. The Phillies and Mayor's going to be taken to the track, West Virginia Breds. And, yes, it's very good to be back in the stakes schedule here. And, again, look forward to seeing how 2023 plays out.
Yeah, it should be a fun year. We got the original gold tonight, April 22nd. We have the Confucius Say for West Virginia Breds. That's easy for me to say, going 7 furlongs. And then April 29th, we got the It's Been Too Long going 4.5 for three-year-old fillies. And then stakes are a pretty regular feature for the rest of the season up through the end of November. One of the things we talked about off air, Paul, is the Confucius Say may be shaping up to be a pretty interesting race.
Exactly. You know, right now, kind of the Philly and Mare division, which we'll obviously get a chance to see tonight. You know, it's a an evenly matched division, which I guess is a nice way of saying that they're really kind of lacks some star power right now. We had a good stretch there where we went from Moonlit Song to Late Night Powwow, then to Star of Night, kind of still waiting for that star to step forward. Whereas in the boys division, we have a couple of pretty serious horses in Wadib and Free Sailin. Of course, Free Sailin actually handed Wadib his first career defeat against West Virginia Breds in their last start together. And so it'll be interesting to see. I would imagine that, again, Free Sailin has the benefit of a race here a little bit more recently than Wadib, but Wadib's been working well. And so that's going to be the first kind of real matchup of the year that I'm really looking forward to seeing how it shakes out, to see how Wadib bounces back off of that that first loss against West Virginia Breds, and see if Free Sailin kind of took a step forward, and if he might not be the king around two turns for the West Virginia Breds, at least for the time being.
That may be the matchup to watch as we go forward the rest of the year at Charlestown Races. All right, let's move back to today, April 15th racing. And I want to first touch on the 7th race, Paul. That's an allowance optional claimer for state breds. And that brings the return of the 8-year-old Penguin Power, a 4-time winner of West Virginia Breeders' Classics races, who really has put together quite the career.
He is just a horse that, again, it just brings a special feeling to you whenever you see him in the entries, because he's just a very fun horse to call his races, fun horse to watch. I mean, just ultra consistent over the years. With any luck on later on tonight, he'll eclipse the $500,000 mark in career earnings, and we'll see if he's still got it. Interesting that they opt to bring him back in a 7-furlong race as opposed to a 4.5-furlong race, which is pretty much where we saw him exclusively the latter half of 2022. And again, he showed that he can certainly handle that 4.5-furlong distance. Looks like he found a good spot to make his return. It'll just be a matter of if he can kind of carry that speed of his for that little extra bit off the bench, because certainly – he has the class edge on this field. Looks like he has a pace advantage over most of these horses, but we'll see if Super Garner, drawn to the outside, he's another one sort of only has one way to go in these two-turn races at Charlestown. He's going to be on the front end, could be hounding him, and we'll see if that could set it up maybe for either a stalker or a closer. Missions 99, another one that that certainly likes to be forwardly placed, so could be a little bit of a tricky comeback spot for the venerable Penguin Power.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him. He's been quite the horse, having made his name going two turns, and then last year, as you mentioned, cutting back to one. Pretty interesting career path there. All right, original gold stakes, 7 furlongs, state bred fillies going two turns there at CT. And you referenced this a minute ago, Paul, that, you know, sometimes in these state bred races, you get one horse that just kind of towers, or two horses that just kind of tower over the field. There's a lot of ways to go in this race.
It was a very tricky race for me to as the morning line odds maker as well, to kind of try to figure out the numbers. Ended up landing on number 10, Lucy Lou, who is the morning line favorite, just because she's a filly that certainly has received quite a bit of of attention at the windows here. Obviously, a lot of that comes probably, I would imagine, from her owner and breeder, Robert Cole Jr., who's certainly been known to place down a shekel or two from time to time. But
you're not lying about that.
But you know, as somebody who again tries to work through a race, when I'm making the morning line, trying to think about what the public might see, I see the fact that four races ago, the three main protagonists in this race, Seneca Rocks, Change the World, and Lucy Liu Hu, they all faced off, and Lucy Liu Hu was not only not the favorite, but she finished third. I just feel like in that race, you don't see two turn races here at Charlestown going 22-4 for that opening quarter. And she was right up on a just wicked pace that I felt like kind of might have set it up a little bit better for her adversaries in that race and Changed the World along with Seneca Rocks. She was right up on that pace as well. So I could definitely see where maybe that could get flipped, but coming back, Lucy Liu Hu has since then crossed the finish line first in three straight starts. Seems like she's kind of taken a little bit of another step forward, whereas that first race where she had to go into some really quick fractions, that was her first start stretching out off of a string of 4.5 furlong races. So we'll see. That was sort of the logic behind the lean of Lucy Liu Hu as the morning line favorite, but it certainly wouldn't be surprised if either Seneca Rocks or Change the World, for that matter, ended up inheriting the role of favoritism as well. But even behind them, I was interested to see the choice. I'm going to obviously assume that Arnaldo Bocachica kind of has his top choice of the Runco Barn runners, and so the fact that he's sticking with Change the World as opposed to The Sky is Falling, who really kind of disappointed in the My Sister Pearl, a rare dud for her. But, if you go back, if you kind of toss that race, she's right there with the rest of these as well. She wouldn't really surprise me. And, I think there are some others that might have a little bit of a long shot look if the pace ends up being similar to what we saw in that last matchup of the three main runners that maybe heats it up and sets it up for an off-the-pace type.
Yeah, I think one thing that I think is a little interesting in terms of betting the race and also in terms of making the morning line, and we're talking with Paul Espinoza, track announcer and line maker at Charlestown Races, you have Seneca Rocks, you have Lucy Liu Hu, their horses. Seneca Rocks has kind of one recent race under her belt, her return, which wasn't bad, running behind Dulcimer Dame, who is the leading winner in the nation so far this year with 7 wins. And Lucy Liu Hu has been active. Other major players here, some of them are coming off the bench, so that's going to pose its own sort of puzzle, I would think.
I would absolutely agree with that. And, the rust over rest and trying to figure out, who will benefit from that. Obviously, that is certainly something that we're familiar with here at, and I imagine at most circuits that race kind of year-round, some of the better horses are going to end up getting the winter off and then time to ramp back up. Like I said, it looks like no shortage of solid works from the Runco runners that are coming back off of those layoffs, and looks like they might have even been kind of working in tandem with some pretty similar times there. So, it definitely adds an extra wrinkle to it, along with the fact that you have them drawn, the first and second choice, at least according to me, are drawn from the rail to the outside. So obviously they have a little over 3/16 of a mile run into that first turn for Lucy Liu Hu to be able to work out a trip from there. So I don't mind that post at all. And I will have to just see how things play out a little bit later tonight.
Do you, so it sounds like you are expecting once again a lively pace. We've got horses like Moonlit Shadow, Lucy Liu Hu. So it sounds like you are expecting a lively pace here and somebody to perhaps make a run into it.
I think that's definitely a possibility. I think the horse that could really decide this ends up being Change the World and what Arnaldo Bocachica opts to do, because she was right up on that hot pace and performed, she performed well into it, and she had a little bit more of a foundation, I guess, to kind of support that stamina. Whereas again, she, on the outside, Lucy Liu Hu, she was kind of stretching out for the first time in that race off of those 4.5 furlong efforts. But I feel like if she comes to join Moonlit Shadow and Changed and Lucy Liu, who I keep hoping I'm not gonna set things up for later tonight with that mental faux pas of calling Lucy Liu Hu the wrong name. But I feel like if it's just those two, then maybe they can kind of keep it manageable. Whereas I feel like if you add a third or even a fourth, obviously, to the mix, that's where things could really kind of start to get dicey for those front runners. So I think a lot of the cards will be held by Arnaldo Bocachica, and whether or not he wants to go on there and keep those top two honest, kind of force their pace. I would imagine that, again, being drawn to the inside the two chief speed rivals, kind of not where he would like to be, but he can certainly take a look over to his right and kind of get a sense of where they are early on and then make his decision off of that. And then that'll definitely, I think, go a long way in determining how the race kind of plays out.
All right, we're going to leave it right there. Paul Espinoza, track announcer, line maker at Charlestown Races. The first stake of the year, the original gold, is tonight at Charlestown. And as you just heard, pretty intriguing handicapping puzzle. You got a full field. You got interesting possible pace scenarios. Horses coming off layoffs. A lot of good stuff to check out tonight at Charlestown. Paul Espinoza, thanks so much for joining us.
I appreciate you having me on, Frank.
Last segment upcoming here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. There's the original gold tonight, as you just heard from Paul Espinoza out of Charlestown. Also today, four stakes at Laurel Park, and who better to talk about them than the Racing Biz Maryland handicapper, John Piazzik. John going to join us in a moment and give us the lowdown on the Federico Tessio Stakes. That's a win and in for the Preakness. And the Weber City Miss, that's a win and in for the Black Eyed Susan. It's been 40 years since the Tessio winner doubled up in the Preakness. That was deputed testimony. He's also the most recent Maryland bred to win the Preakness. Is this the year the streak ends? Let's talk to John. John Piazzik, welcome to the program. It is Federico Tessio Stakes Day, and I know you've got selections. Folks can read John's selections every day of live racing on theracingbiz.com. Laurel Park picks and ponderings from John Piazzik. So, John, why don't you share with us your wisdom on the Tessio? That's a win, and you're in for the Preakness if you're a Triple Crown nominee.
A win, and you're in, and my top pick was not an original Triple Crown nominee. He was just supplemented a few weeks ago, and I think that's a big tell for his chances here. Number one, Coffee with Chris, a Maryland bred, a descendant of Maryland bred Horse of the Year Christopher R, bred by Tom Rooney, whose family has owned Shamrock Farm for a long time. This one had a very tough trip in his last start of private terms. It was his two-turn debut. He broke from the extreme outside post, had an overland trip, but still ran on well late and finished a clear-cut second behind the Kenny McPeak stripper Hayes Strike. Two starts back, he handled a one-turn mile with ease when the Miracle Wood Stakes going away. And he's owned Drisnet figures in the 90s in four of his last six starts. And I think that the late Triple Crown nomination is interesting because John Fossman Jr. was not sure all winter long if this horse could handle two turns. He proved last year that he can. And while Salton was a little bit coy in previous interviews, I have to believe that late nomination means that A, they think he is a threat at two turns, and B, if he wins this and he comes out of it well, it's more likely than not we'll think about the Preakness.
I have to agree with your take on whether they'd go to the Preakness. Just, and, you know, the Salzmans, like a lot of Maryland horsemen, make their money by putting horses in the right spots, by not taking crazy big swings, by not spending $6,000 to supplement horses to the Triple Crown that they don't think might be able to get there. So you kind of have to think this was a calculated risk, if you will, with that horse. Now, John, I want to talk for a minute about your second and third place horses. These are a pair of Shippers. Summer Cause for Christophe Clement broke his maiden last out at Gulfstream. Perform for Shug McGee, he broke his maiden last out at Tampa Bay Downs. And What I think makes these horses really interesting, and I admit I tend to not love shippers coming into Maryland that don't have advantages on the buyer speed figures, because a lot of times it doesn't quite work out for them. But in this case, I'm really intrigued in particular by Summer Cause because of the company lines.
Yeah, he's faced a lot better maidens in his last two starts. Most notably, if you go back to his maiden race at Aqueduct on December 17th, he finished third behind none other than Tappet Trice, who we just saw win the Bluegrass last Saturday, and figures to be one of Derby's favorites in a few weeks. Summer Cause broke his maiden last time out at Gulfstream Park on February 26th, and did it the hard way. He was angled off the inside about mid-race, raced off the rail most of the way, but grinded on late, got up to win by a half length. He has the kind of running style, looks like it'll play well at a mile and an eighth based on his win at this distance last time. He's one of a few in here who has a win at two turns, but is the only one who has won so far at today's mile and an eighth, or one of two who has won at a mile and an eighth, the other one being Time to Cruise, and Summer Cause definitely has a lot more backlash than that were.
Yeah, and I think one thing, John, that's worth noting on Summer Cause is that win last out came over a horse named Game Warden, who has yet to run back. Game Warden, in his prior start, had finished second to King's Barnes, and King's Barnes turned around, won an allowance, and then won the Louisiana Derby, and a lot of people are high on him. So Summer Cause definitely keeping the right kind of company and performed to perhaps a somewhat lesser extent, but when he was fourth two races ago, the winner was Mage, and Mage came back and ran great in the Florida Derby.
Yeah, Perform has also been keeping pretty good class lines. He also lost to Ray's Kane last fall at Keeneland. That one also looks like he'll be in the Derby starting gate. And last July at Belmont, he lost to Lost Oak, who went on to win the Sapling Stakes later that summer. Perform himself has taken a big step forward from two to three. He's run far and away his best figures on the Brisnet scale as a three-year-old, and handled his two-turn debut with ease last time out at Tampa Bay Downs, made a nice move on the back of the pack, kicked on strongly late, and won by almost three lengths. I'm a little surprised to see him not on the Triple Crown supplements list. Nonetheless, he's 8-1 on the morning line, and if he goes off anywhere near that price, I think he's worth the bet.
And finally, your fourth place horse here is another who was a late supplement to the Triple Crown. That's 90% Maddie for Butch Reed. I think the evidence says we got to draw a line through the withers and just take this horse's form as the win in the City of Brotherly Love, second in the Parks Juvenile, and some other good outings. You agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, take out that line in the withers where he was wide every step of the way, and he's been in very sharp form. The City of Brotherly Love, definitely a breakthrough race, I think, even though he had been keeping good form before. That race really sets him up to the next level in my book. He set the pace, drew away, ran a career best speed figure. Now, outside of that withers, he has never raced outside of parks, and one might be tempted to say that he can't run on outside of parks. However, I would disagree with that. I think he had a very bad trip in the weather, and it was so bad a race, I think you kind of totally toss it out and move on. I think he's very interesting in this spot, especially if he's on or near the pace, as I expect.
Okay, that's the Federico Tessio Stakes, winning in for the Preakness, 1675, says John Piazzik. And again, you can read John's picks and analysis every day of live racing on theracingbiz.com. Let's spin one race back to the Weber City Miss, mile and a 16th for three-year-old fillies. This a win and in spot for the grade two Black-Eyed Susan the day before the Preakness. And John, this is a perhaps more lightly accomplished field, and you're looking, the favorites in here are Girl Trouble for Butch Reed and Pharaoh's Baby Gal for Brittany Russell, but you're looking to beat the favorites here.
I'm trying to beat both of them. I think Girl Trouble has a shot. I don't think Paco Lopez gave her a great ride in the mainline stakes. As the 1-5, Choice Girl Trouble stalked the pace wide and looks set to blow past them at the top of the stretch while racing on the outside. Instead of Paco, decided to split forces. She was kind of shying away from her rivals late, couldn't get by, and ended up losing a photo for place. She's won twice going one turn in stakes earlier in her career and was a solid second in the Ruthless at Aqueduct earlier this season. I think she has a very good shot, but she'll be overbet. I'm kind of hoping number four, Crypto Mama, slides through the crack a little bit here for Kelly Green and Horacio Caramanos. Ran a very nice race in a first-level allowance on this track going a mile on March 10th. Had a great trip near the pace, drew off strongly late, 1 by 1 3/4 lengths with a career best speed figure. In fact, take out attempted stakes at Aqueduct in November, where she stumbled at the start, got rushed off, and didn't do much afterward. And she's improved her figure with every single start from her debut. She is going a mile and a 16th for the first time today, but did run well going two turns last October at Delaware Park in the White Clay Creek Stakes, where she set the pace and held on for a second. Don't think she'll have any trouble going distance here. And if both Girl Trouble and Pharaoh's Baby Gal get the action, I think Crypto Mama is going to end up being the value play.
Now, when we were talking off air prior to this, you mentioned another horse who certainly is going to offer you a good price. You might need a wheelbarrow if this one wins. That's Six the Hard Way.
Yeah, Six the Hard Way, number five, trained by Rudy Sanchez Solomon, ridden by Jamie Rodriguez, coming off a excellent winter meet here, especially in the month of March. He won at about a 40% clip, including a big upset win in the Conniver with Marvelous. And I think he is in a similar spot once again in that he is riding a long shot with a good closing kick. This one broke through maiden two starts back, coming from well off the pace, one going away that day, then stepped it up big time in a pretty solid first-level allowance field last time out, came from last, was forced to check, still got up to win, and as noted, ran easily a career-best figure. There is a decent amount of speed in here. Pharaoh's Baby Gal is going to go. Crypto Mama is going to be near the pace. Have to figure Bill Charles for all three of the favorites will be close to the front. If the pace is hot, it's going to make Six of the Hard Way's task that much easier. And I think at the least, if you're playing an exacta or a trifecta, you have to consider her underneath.
I like it. I like the old 15-1 or, 15-1 morning line horse in the exacta or the triple. All right, winner of this, winning in for the Black Eyed Susan. John, you're going 4-3-5-6 here in the Weber City Miss, 1-6-7-5 in the Federico Tessio Stakes. Final thoughts out the door.
Well, it's going to be a great day of racing, probably the best day of racing in Maryland so far this year. The other two are the other two undercard stakes are great. This is like the grand final for everyone who has been following the Maryland three-year-old stakes as closely as I have, and hopefully we'll see some great races and quite possibly a few Preakness and Black-Eyed Susan long shots will emerge. Well, maybe not even long shots. Hopefully not.
All right. Sounds good. John Piazza, good luck at the windows, and we'll catch you at the races.
Sounds good, Frank.
That's going to do it here for us on this week's Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us. We do appreciate it. Thanks to our show supporters, including the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, True Valor, and others. Thanks to our guests this week. Today's show featured Alan Foreman of the MTHA, Paul Espinosa from Charlestown Races, John Piasek, the Racing Biz handicapper from Maryland, Richard Hackerman, and Larry Johnson. Keep up with racing and breeding all week long on the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You can tune in next week at 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive to hear the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic Racing and Breeding. My name's Frank Vespi. Have a great week, everyone, and we'll see you in the winner's circle.